These days, everybody wants to be famous, but some people become infamous. I don't know if you've watched the Netflix series, The Thing About Pam. Now, if there's a true crime story, this is one of them. And today we have Rebecca Pittman, who is a best-selling author of many titles in several genres, but her book, Countdown to Murder, Pam Hupp, Death Insured, brings us to one of those questions of get to know who your friends really are. And even their past, murder, deceit. Well, today we dive into the book, Countdown to Murder. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, best-selling author, Rebecca F. Pittman. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, Tony.
Well, first of all, thank you for being here. And as you can see, I'm in Missouri. We are ready to learn more about Pam Hupp, but I had to make a correction. I said Netflix, but it's actually Hulu that the series is on. So, but I'm going to get right into this because I know people love that juicy stuff, and maybe people have just watched the series. First of all, did you write this novel or this book before the series was going in production? And also, how realistic, if you have, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but how realistic is the series? Because you know Hollywood, they like to give it that little extra jazz stuff.
I actually had begun research and writing the book long before I found out it was going to become an NBC miniseries, which has not hurt the book at all.
Right.
And then it made People Magazine and all these other things. So, no, I'd already been researching it and done the majority of the interviews with the prosecuting attorneys and detectives and a lot of family members of the victims. As far as how authentic the show is, let's just say that they nail down the most important parts, but there's also a lot of filler.
Oh, I'm sure.
Every once in a while, I'll see something that is not right. I've only thrown one thing at the TV so far, so I'm very proud of that. But no, I think as far as the salient points are concerned, they've nailed all of them. They've got the essence of the story right.
Well, I know that, and I'm showing a copy of the book for the people that are watching or listening to the audio podcast, but this particular true crime story, I know it made headlines, you know, Dateline and, people, definitely a lot of the local news. I'm originally from Kansas. I never heard of this murder. So I think this was about 2011 is when this happened. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. The Betsy Faria's murder was 2 days after Christmas, 2011.
Oh, got it. Okay. So I didn't actually get to hear it, at least if, you know, that's been almost 10 years ago. So my memory could just be not that good. But I'm curious to what made this such a true crime story that, you know, made, you know, someone like yourself write a book and the studios to make this into a TV series. Why was this such a epic tale?
Well, for one thing, female serial killers are very rare. They only make up 5-7% of the serial killer population. And then the audacity of the crimes and the viciousness of them was just something that when I first heard about it, and my friend Patty Bath from Missouri actually got hold of me and said, "Have you heard of this crazy story going on out here?" And when I looked it up, I went, "Oh my gosh." So I think it's literally the things that this woman, who was a typical, and I hate to say housewife because I could get shot for that, but that's what the police were calling her. This, your everyday normal insurance agent, and yet she left this trail of carnage behind her. And it was the audacity of the crimes that it's still shocking. It's still ongoing. The death penalty trial for Pam is still in the works right now for killing Betsy. She's in prison for life for killing another man. So this is very much still going on, Tony.
Well, let's go back. For some people that got to see the series, We got to see the event of the killing. Now we're talking to O'Fallon. I think in the series it was a different city. Did they switch cities, or was it in a different?
No, she actually killed three people in three different counties.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, then let's go back. Where did you start? Where did you start in your book about Pam?
It begins with the killing of Betsy Faria, and they lived in Troy.
Okay, and Troy. That's where I was thinking of.
Yeah. So that's Lincoln County, Missouri. And basically, Pam met Betsy about 10 years earlier. They were life insurance agents together, and then they parted ways. And Betsy started a little part-time DJ service and ended up, that's Betsy with the reddish hair, and that's Pam with the blonde that you're showing there. She actually DJed Pam's daughter's wedding. But it wasn't until 2010, when Betsy was diagnosed with breast cancer, that Pam suddenly bounced back into her life big time. Betsy had both breasts removed, but they said that they'd gotten it all. And she had planned a celebration of life cruise. And a month before the cruise, they found out not only was the cancer back, it had spread to her liver, and they gave her about 3 years to live. And suddenly Pam is now in the picture every single day, taking her to all her chemo treatments, walking with her, going with her. She still wanted to play tennis. Betsy was an avid tennis player. And so, to bring the story current, on the day that Betsy was murdered, she had a chemo appointment. And she spent the night with her mother that night to be closer to her appointment. And her husband, Russ, was supposed to pick her up later after his game night. Every Tuesday he had a game night with his buddies, and he said, I'll pick you up after, which is usually about 9.
Right.
Okay. So they had it all set up. So anyway, Pam texts Betsy about 1:19 in the afternoon and said, I'm on my way over to get you. And Betsy said, don't come. My friend Bobby is here. She's staying with us tonight, and she's going to take me. And I haven't seen her in a long time, and we just want some one-on-one time. Don't come. Pam later told detectives she never got that text. But when they ran her cell phone records, she not only got it, she texts back, bummer. And so she shows up anyway at 1:30 at Betsy's mother's apartment to pick her up. And Betsy's mother, Janet, said they've already gone. And so, undaunted, Pam goes traipsing over to the chemo center, and Betsy was shocked to see her walk in. And she pushed and pushed until finally she made Betsy agree that she could take her home that night instead of Russ. So Russ calls Betsy just before he's heading out for game night. I'll pick you up. She goes, well, Pam's going to bring me home. I'm not feeling very well, and she'll bring me home, and that way I can get home a little earlier. And he goes, are you sure? She says, yeah, but I don't have my keys with me now. He goes, I'll leave the front door open for you, and I'll see you when I get home from game night. So Pam shows up, waits an hour for Betsy to quit playing a board game with her mother and Bobby, and then Pam drives her home. They pull into the driveway at 7:04. And Pam decides she needs to call her husband to say, look, I'm at Betsy's. I'm going to be here a few minutes, and then I'm headed home. And then she shoves the phone in Betsy's face and says, here, say hi to Mark, which was Pam's husband. Mm-hmm. This is to establish the alibi that Betsy's alive and well at 7:04. So Betsy says, hey, Mark, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. And then this is where Pam's stories change. The following morning, when the detective showed up at Pam's house, because Pam was the last to see Betsy alive, supposedly, and drove her home, she told the police, they said, did you go in? No, I didn't. And it was really freaky because there were no lights on, and yet the door was unlocked. And yet 3 sentences later, they said, so you didn't go in. You know what? I did. I did go in and turned on the foyer light and the living room light. Yet one sentence before, she'd said Betsy turned on the living room light. So I guess it takes 2 people to turn on that light.
Right.
So she said Betsy let the dog out and put it on a chain because Pam was afraid of the dog. He was one of those that jumps on you. And then they said, so that's all you did? You just went in and turned a couple. Well, I also went in the kitchen and turned that light on. And Betsy took me to the master bedroom to show me a Christmas present Russ got her. So now Pam has put herself everywhere in that house where if her DNA is found, it's not going to look suspicious. So she went from I didn't go in at all to basically the grand tour of the house. And then she said she stayed a few minutes and Betsy was curling up on the couch with a blanket to watch TV. Later, she changed her story and says, you know, now it occurs to me, I think she walked me to the door and waved goodbye. So she kept changing the story. So Russ gets home from game night. Pam leaves around 7:27, actually calls Betsy at that time and says, I'm home free. When the detectives looked at that, it was the only time they questioned Pam. And they went, wait a minute. You couldn't have gotten clear to your house, which is 30 minutes away. If you pulled into the driveway at 7:04, went through all the rooms, got her comfortable on the couch. Oh, I didn't mean I was home. I mean I was home free, because I was now to the highway where I knew where I was. I mean, that's all she did was change her story. And so Russ gets home at 9:00. And walks in, sets a bag of dog food down, and finds his wife laying on the floor with a knife still embedded in her neck. And the wrists were cut so deep that the one wrist was clear to the bone. I mean, it was bad. There was blood all over her face and blood pooled beneath her head. Oddly, her two anklet socks were halfway off her feet and had blood on them. And he fell down on the floor to look at her, and her tongue was protruding, and he could tell she was dead. And he fell apart and went into the kitchen, called 911, and said, I think my wife's killed herself.
Can I stop you right there? Because I know in the case, in the court, they used that a lot against him, saying the wife killed herself. I mean, if I would see a neck sticking out of the side of somebody's, I mean, a knife sticking out of somebody's neck and then that many cuts, I probably wouldn't have said killed herself. Why did they ever find out, or did they ever find out why he said that particular thing?
It's because when she was originally diagnosed with cancer, she did try to kill herself.
Okay.
And he actually took it from her and got caught cut in the process and had to have stitches. She had left suicide note before, was pulled over on a bridge and asked the policeman if she could have his gun. And they actually hospitalized her at a psychiatric unit for that comment. So the thing I need to point out, Tony, is Betsy was wearing dark clothing. It was a navy blue top and black sweatpants.
Right.
He didn't see all the other knife wounds at that time. He saw the knife and the slit wrists and literally fell apart. But yeah, that came back to biting big time.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt. And so continue the story, because that was a key point that really, like you said, kind of bit him back in when they went to court against him. So, but please continue the story, because it's so fascinating.
Well, so anyway, he calls 911 and he is so distraught the dispatcher can't hardly get him to settle down. And the police show up. The first responder showed up, Hollingsworth, and Russ said she killed herself. The minute that this detective walked in and took one look at her, he knew it wasn't a suicide. So they put Russ in a patrol car, and then the EMTs start showing up and the crime scene people, and they're going, no, this was not a suicide. So they say, Russ, can we take you downtown? And let's just, you know, we just need to ask us. And at this time, he is completely, this is typical. This is what they do. There was no sign at all that he thought they didn't believe him. Anyway, they kept him for 36 hours total, including a holdover. Gave him a polygraph test that turned out to be a fake polygraph test. After the test, came in and said, you lied, you stabbed her. She's been stabbed 25 times. And he just doubled over and went, oh my God. And he's just falling apart. And it's the first he's heard this. And they said, and they're still counting, Russ. And so they're pushing and pushing. And in the meantime, they're finding things at the crime scene, including bloody slippers in the master bedroom closet, Russ's, with Betsy's blood on them, a blood smear on the light switch leading into the master bedroom closet, some kind of a print on the knife handle. And so it's looking pretty bad for him. And so they, while they're doing all of this, the next morning they show up at Pam's house. And Pam acts like she doesn't know anything has happened to Betsy. And as soon as they tell her, it's, oh no, you know, she goes into this whole thing and the whole sniffles. I every time I listen to the recording of that, she sure rallies fast because it starts out with the sniffling and everything. But as soon as she starts burying Russ, her tone levels out and she starts nailing his coffin. She goes, they said, what do you think of him? He wasn't nice to Betsy. He was verbally abusive. And then a week ago, he started playing this game of putting a pillow over her face and saying, this is what it's going to feel like when you die. She goes, and then about 2 weeks ago when we went to a gym, she pulled a Gatorade bottle out of her gym bag and took a sip and spit it out and said, this tastes funny. So she's setting all of this up to make it look like he did. And they're buying all of it. They're recording everything. She even said that the silver Nissan that was in the driveway when she took Betsy home the night before, she goes, Betsy said that's the car Russ was driving. She later changed her story when she realized that wasn't even their car. It belonged to Betsy's daughter. and Russ's alibi witnesses said he was driving his Ford Explorer. And she doubled back and changed her story later on that. But she literally buried him. So between the bloody slippers, Pam's evidence, and Russ saying it looked like a suicide, that was all it took. They did let him go home. He was at the funeral a few days later. And then the day after the funeral, they arrested him.
Wow. See, and that's going to be another question of mine. And because I've watched the series, I'm not completely finished with it. But so what really, like you said, what really hurt him was saying that she committed suicide. Other than that, there was no evidence that really, I mean, because people have arguments, you know, husband and wives have arguments. So that doesn't always give cause to murder your wife. She was dying. So it didn't make sense to change, because this goes into the next one, change the life insurance, because to Pam, because I'm a little lost here. So when did Pam forge the life insurance change, or did she convince Betsy to change the life insurance? Because I even watching the series, I didn't quite understand. I heard that she did it, but I never got the actual information that she actually did change the life insurance.
Yeah, she did.
Oh,
4 days before 4 days before Betsy was murdered, she and Pam went to the Winghaven Library of all places.
Right.
I mean, they were both life insurance agents. It's a State Farm life insurance policy,
right.
Why not go there to fill out a change
right,
of beneficiary,
right.
Or go to a notary? But they go to a library, we do know Betsy was there. The librarian testified, and they said, did it look like Betsy was under duress or anything? She goes, no, she even checked out a book when they were finished. So basically what Pam had done is convinced Betsy, look, because Betsy was trying to set up something so her daughters would have something after she died.
Right, right.
And Pam said, they're just going to blow the money. They're only 17 and 21 years old. And, you know, Russ is just going to blow the money, because
right.
It was Russ at that time that would have been the beneficiary.
Right.
Just tell you what, put my name on it. I'm your good buddy. And I'll make sure as the girls grow up, at certain milestones that they get the money, like when they get married or need a car or college, right. And I'll divvy it out so that they don't blow through it. And Betsy changed the life insurance policy and put Pam on there for $150,000. And 4 days later, she was murdered.
I mean, to me, that would make law enforcement very suspicious.
Yeah.
Because even if the husband didn't know, you know, I would be very suspicious going, oh, the life insurance was changed to your name, you know, 4 days before. Now you're the one that was the last to see her. You're the one that changed, or you guys changed the life insurance to your name. And yeah, I would be like, that would be a suspect to me. Since there was.
Yeah, but the beauty, if you want to call it beauty of it, is she flipped it. She said, Russ found out that Betsy made me the beneficiary, and that's what made him fly into a rage that night and kill her. So she used it to her advantage. And the detectives, they have the bloody slippers, they've got all the other stuff, they've got their man. They didn't look at anybody else.
But there was a lot of evidence, according to the series that I watched. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to read your book yet, and I apologize for that. But even the slippers, there were blood on top of the slippers, not on the bottom of the slippers. Well, unless it just dripped on the slippers, and then there was no blood on the floor. So that's one thing that would, you know, be suspicious of. And then there's, you know, definitely other things with the law enforcement that definitely went wrong. Why? It almost felt like back in the day in the South, you know, where a black person got arrested and the whole town just came together and wanted to get the white person off and not put them to trial. I mean, and I hate to compare it to that, but it was just seemed like they were totally against this guy. They wanted him to go to jail. They didn't even want to hear if Pam Hupp was even had a chance to be a suspect. Why was the law enforcement, even the district attorney, didn't even want to look at any other evidence other than him?
Well, when you've got, and again, I hate to use the word, a typical housewife, and I got to give props to Pam. She bragged that she could sell because she'd been in sales. And she could come across as your best friend, your good buddy. Everyone believed her. And even to watch her videos, I'm sitting there going, darn it, I would have believed her. She's just really good. So when you've got, again, the bloody slippers, and they didn't get to the part yet that it looked like they'd been dipped in the blood. They just ran with it.
Right.
And you've got this woman saying all these things, and then they spread out and they're interviewing the family, and suddenly the family's remembering incidences with Russ, with his temper, with bad words that he was calling Betsy and the girls that he pushed her once.
Right.
And so they just, if you want to call it confirmation bias, anything that would back up that this guy did it, they grabbed it. But this is Troy, and it's a very small rural kind of backcountry little town.
Right.
And this was Leah Askey, the prosecuting attorney. This was her first murder trial. It was her first murder trial. And they just ran with what they had, and they thought they had a slam dunk, plus a guy saying it looked like she committed suicide. Later, when the autopsy came out, it was much more than 25 stab wounds. It was 56. But here's the heinous part of it. Only a quarter of those were actually done while Betsy was alive. The rest of them were done after she was dead to make it look like rage.
Right.
Some of them were in her back, which if you're committing suicide, that's a little hard to pull
right,
off.
Right.
but the dark clothing covered them. I mean, they were all over the place, and it was overkill. The one to the wrist I mentioned, to the bone, there was no blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would have bled profusely, and that shows you her heart had stopped pumping when that one was inflicted. So it blows my mind how you could stand there and inflict that many wounds on somebody that you had called your friend.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, there's a definitely, I when I was a child or a kid, I was probably about 12. I had a cousin that was murdered in Winfield, Kansas. And the reason they knew it was somebody that, and it ended up being her ex-husband or estranged husband, because she was stabbed so many times, and then a neighbor heard the screams. She went over, and he ended up killing her too.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, he was in the military, drove up from Arizona in one night, killed, and then went back. But because so many stab wounds, the way it was done, that's when they knew somebody, that she knew somebody. Because most people that just kill, it's either like, you know, it's because out of rage or something, or a serial killer that just has a lot of rage from whatever reason that they kill. But so yeah, that would be definitely not considered suicide. And that's why I was thinking, with somebody that says suicide, it's like any logically thinking person would say, well, if I kill this person and I'm going to stab them 50 some times in the back and wherever it was at, they're not going to believe that it's suicide.
Well, but Russ's attorney, Joel Schwartz, made a very good point. He said the fact that this man said suicide when it was so obviously not actually points to his innocence. If he had done this and tried to stage it, he would have said a murder.
Mm.
But he didn't. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it actually should have gone in his favor that in his despair and shock, he said suicide. If he'd done it and was trying to set it up, he would have said murder if he knew how the punctures in her back.
Right. Yeah.
But he didn't.
He just, because he didn't see it.
I thought that should have gone in his favor.
Do you think the law enforcement got, because I know also there was pictures that were supposedly there was malfunction of the camera and end up it didn't. And so it kind of got hidden until somebody in the district attorney's office said, I don't work for the district attorney. I work for the office itself. So they released, secretly released all these pictures. Do you feel that the attorney's office kind of knew some of this stuff because they started hiding evidence or not presenting evidence?
Yeah. In fact, with the luminol test, what they were
saying
is that the kitchen floor looked like it had been cleaned up of blood, that Russ had done a quick cleanup.
Right.
And that they took this luminol test, blue star test, and that it showed there'd been a blood cleanup. But then in the trial, they said, you know what, and this is with a jury, mm-hmm. they said, for some reason, the camera malfunctioned, and those six pictures came out black. You're just going to have to take our word for it.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It wasn't until Russ's second trial, when they got discovery, when they got all of the evidence brought over, that Joel Schwartz fell out of his chair. Not only did the pictures show up, they showed there was no cover-up.
Right.
It showed nothing. In fact, one of the crime scene techs who was not on the prosecution's payroll, crime scene techs are hired. They don't work really for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really honest. And she goes, not only was there not a cleanup, the floors were gritty. There were dog treats still laying on them. It was obvious nothing had been cleaned up. There was no blood in any of the drains. They took all the drain traps out.
I saw that.
No
yeah.
blood. No blood on any towels. How in the world did this man clean up? And when they took him in, when they showed up on the scene, he was wearing the same clothes that you can see in the video surveillance at Conoco when he was putting gas in his car to go to game night. Same shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got three other video cameras at stores he stopped at to get the dog food and
right.
cigarettes and tea. And he's wearing the same outfit. And when they swabbed him at the station, nothing on his hands, his legs, his feet, his clothes had
right.
not one drop on him. Where did he clean up?
And that's what I think in the series, I never knew what they kind of added or did not. But she said, I feel that he didn't have any clothes on at all. Well, Well, if you didn't have any clothes on, I'm sure most people would try to fight back. There was no scratch marks. There were nothing indication of any struggle on his body. So that's why I was like, this. I mean, either this was a brand new district attorney that just did not want to lose, and they were going to try to make this happen no matter what. That's why I was like, this just doesn't seem right when you're watching. It almost, it just felt like it was all in and on it together. So I,
well, even in the second trial, she had one of the detectives outright lie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And right. Say he saw water droplets in the tub. This is 3.5 years later, and he now remembers seeing right. 11 water droplets.
Right.
In the tub. It doesn't even matter if he did. It there was nothing in the drains.
Right.
There was no blood. There was no, I mean,
Yeah. And my dad owned a grocery store and a meat locker where he used to butcher a lot. You know, cows and all that stuff. And so we used to clean the, you know, the back butcher area. And definitely there was always blood left over in the drains. You'd have to sit there and almost flush it completely out to get rid of it. Because, you know, there's blood does stick around in the smallest places. So, yeah, that would be really hard, especially if somebody that in rage and grief and all these things to have the state of mind to almost scrub everything clean.
Well, it all, the coroner and one of the crime scene techs said whoever did this would have been splattered in blood.
Right.
Well, that also pertains to Pam. And yet we have yet to find any of her DNA really at the scene. And I don't believe she wore gloves because in July of 2021, when the new prosecuting attorney, Mike Wood, put out his probable cause statement.
Right.
Remember I told you the socks on Betsy's feet were halfway off?
Right, right.
And had blood on them. They now believe that the murderer used them as gloves.
Oh.
They said that it actually looked like fingers inside the gloves, not toes.
Wow.
And there's blood on the socks, but there's none on her feet. If she'd stepped in blood, it would have gone through the sock. And it, and then there was a transfer on her heel that looked like the person was trying to get the socks back on her after they right. used them and couldn't do it, so they just left them halfway off. The bloody light switch going into the master bedroom shows a weave pattern, and these pictures are all in the book. It doesn't look like a thumbprint or anything else. It's got a weave pattern, and so did the imprint on the knife handle. And that was throwing everybody. It's like, what is that? But now we know, we're thinking now it's the socks, the weave pattern on the socks, that's what she was using them as gloves.
Well, one thing that you said, it took almost 3 years to get the second trial.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it didn't take 3 years to figure out that she did not give any of her children or the children any of the money from the trust.
She did a really neat tap dance with that.
I was going to say,
the prosecuting attorney's detectives helped her. So right before Russ's first trial, he'd been in jail for 2 years. And she's still their star witness. Wow. They're bringing her in all the time, just racking up stuff against Russ. And the one, and Detective McCarrick said, did you ever set up that trust for Betsy's daughters?
Right.
He goes, no. And he goes, that's a problem. That's a huge problem, because with Russ's trial, it's going to look bad that you come into this windfall and you've yet to set up that trust. So can you do that before the trial? So he's actually leading her and helping her not to look like a suspect. Oh, yeah, I can do that. So the trial was in November. In June, she set up a trust, but she didn't put any money in it. So as it got closer to the trial, the detective comes back. He goes, did you ever put any money in there yet? And she went, no, not yet. And so finally, it was only a few days before the trial, she put some money in it.
Some.
But she didn't give it to the girls yet. She just made it look, she transferred some money in there so it would look better for her. But Russ gets convicted. and he goes to prison. So right after he gets convicted, she drains it of $97,000-something.
Because didn't she purchase a home?
Yeah, she went and bought a house off the auction block to flip. And so she, at this point, she thinks she's home free. So the girls decide to sue her. So this is where she, this is her undoing, Tony, and you're going to love this.
This is my favorite part.
So at the they had a deposition, which is typically what you do before a civil trial. So right. The girl's attorneys had her come in to kind of see where everything stood. And they said, what are your plans today with the money? And she said, today? I don't have any plans with the money. She was really cocky. And so she danced around for a while. And finally she said, you know what? It was a revocable trust and I revoked it. And they said, so they're not getting any money. I put it in real estate. Really cocky. When she walked out of the room, The attorney got on the phone to Joel Schwartz. Now, remember, Russ is in prison.
Right.
And he's been there for a while. And they said, Joel, you might be interested in knowing Pam was just here and she revoked the trust. The girls are not going to get any of the money that she said Betsy wanted her to give to them. And Joel's going, yes. And it's like, if you have any new evidence, you can do what's called a Mooney motion.
What's it called?
He put Mooney.
Oh, Mooney.
Motion. And he put all of his evidence against Pam, including that she just emptied the trust and took it to a judge, a different judge, and prayed they'd give Russ a second chance, and they did. And they gave him a second trial. And now Pam is sweating bullets. If she just shut up, he probably would have still been in prison. And the irony of it is he was acquitted. After the second trial, they let him go. They felt there was enough there for reasonable doubt that there was another suspect that had even more motive than he did, and all of the other stuff that was brought in. And it was just shortly after Russ's acquittal, the girls take Pam to court
right.
for the money, and Pam won.
I haven't got to that part yet. I haven't got to that part, so this is all new.
Well, the paperwork was in order, so the judge said, there's nothing I can do. If Betsy had wanted her girls to have it, she'd have put their names on it, and she didn't.
Oh, my God.
If Pam had just shut up during that deposition, she wouldn't have had to pay him anyway. She won.
I'm curious.
And yet, because she said that,
right.
Russ got a second trial, got let go, and now Joel Schwartz said, I'm coming for you, Pam.
That's why I think the system's really broken when the motive of the insurance policy, to me, is huge. The switching is huge. And then end up spending it all and not giving it to the daughters. For me, that would have been a huge red flag, even if it was 2 or 3 or 4 years later. I just think that should have woke the local authorities up, and it's strange that they didn't even want to look into it.
Well, they're all sad.
Right.
But right before Russ's second trial, again, the detective said, this is going to look really bad that you've spent that money. Can you put that money, show that you've got that money, that you didn't spend it. So 1 month before Russ's second trial, Pam's mother plunges from a third floor balcony at her senior citizen living facility and dies. And Pam gets $100,000 of life insurance off her mother and hurries literally 4 days before the trial
and puts
money that money where they can see she hasn't spent it. She killed her mother in order to show that there was still that money and she hadn't spent it.
So, that, you know, that when I was watching it, you know, we have her mother, we have her friend, and then it kind of made reference to where in the past there was a woman in Florida, an older woman in Florida, that all of a sudden it seemed like she was watching her or taking care of her, and all of a sudden she's digging up money. And again, I never got the story of that, but it definitely seems to be suspicious that she has all this money to move to Missouri. Whatever happened
right
to that?
Now, that's still a rumor, and I don't know.
Oh, it's a rumor.
I mean, I don't
okay.
know everything. Maybe Dateline found something I didn't, but I talked to the detectives and so forth a lot, and I'm actually going to be going out to Florida, and I've talked to the Naples Sheriff's Department. Right now, it's still a rumor, but there is some stuff going around that Pam made some money off of some woman that died while she was in Naples. And when Pam moved back to Missouri, she had $80,000 that she put into an annuity and had some money. And someone said, where'd you get the money to get such a nice house? And she goes, oh, this lady three doors down died and left me some money. So, yeah, I think, and people said when she moved back to Missouri from Florida, she changed. She was a recluse. She didn't rekindle friendships because she grew up in Missouri and went to high school. And
right.
Something happened. But, and I know that if the people are watching the NBC series, the final episode is Tuesday night. And what it'll show is her last victim, which is Louis Gumpenberger. And she was found guilty of that, and that's why she's in prison right now doing life.
So they never did they ever convict her of her friend and her mother?
The Betsy's trial is about to begin. Basically what happened quickly is Russ is let go. He's acquitted.
Right.
Joel Schwartz is making no bones about it. He's coming for Pam. So this is really horrible. So what Pam did in 2016, shortly after Russ was, he was released November of the following, or the year previous. So a few months later, probably 6 or 7 months later, Pam went out and started trolling this trailer park and pulled up at the end of the driveway, and this young woman was leaning against the railing watching her dog, and Pam yelled out, "Do you babysit?" And the woman goes, "Who drives through a trailer park and asks if you babysit?"
Right.
So she walks to the end of the driveway, and Pam has the window down. She goes, "No." And Pam goes, "Well, actually, I'm Kathy with Dateline. I'm the producer. And I'll give you $1,000 if you'll get in the car with me and go do a 911 reenactment call. We have a little place rented right over here, $1,000. And this lady has no shoes on, and she's pretty street smart. And something about this is hinky, but she wants to see where it's going to go. And Pam says, oh, and by the way, the producer doesn't like keys and wallets and cigarettes and stuff because it clutters stuff up. So leave all that here. So she goes in the house to let her dog in, comes back, gets in the car and says, can I see some credentials that you're with Dateline? And Pam goes, oh, I'll show you that when we get there. And this lady gets nervous. They've driven a few feet and she goes, you know what? I need to go back and get shoes. And what was smart was she had Pam pull into her driveway and she had a security camera. And the camera catches the license plate. You can see Pam Hupp. You can see the car. And she goes in and comes back out and says, never mind, I don't want to do it. And Pam drives off. In fact, Pam looked up and said, you've got cameras. And she goes, yes, I do. And Pam drives off and goes around the block, sees a guy mowing the lawns. He's the landscaper for the trailer park. And she cuts him off. She, you know, as he's coming this way, and she gives him the same spiel. I'm with Dateline. I'll give you $1,000 if you come with me. He goes, no, I've got to get all this. I'm not interested. She waits 6 days, and I think it's because that security camera made her nervous. I think she waited to see if the police were going to call her or anything, and they didn't. And here's the really awful part. She went to a different place, went to an apartment complex, and this young man named Louis Gumpenberger was sitting out there in his chair. He's 33, in fantastic physical shape, but he'd been in a car wreck and had the mentality of a 12-year-old. And she knew it. I mean, you can hear his slurred speech. He limped. He couldn't run.
Right.
His mother had to drive him everywhere. And he came over to the car and he bought it. He bought the story. He got in. She drove him to her house, told him a script to say. And then when he got into the house, she really did call 911 and said, help, help, there's an intruder in my house. He's thinking this is all part of the reenactment. She's told him to bang on the walls and make a lot of noise. And he says, you want me to do to you what I did to your wife? And he got the line wrong. And she went, no, no, I'm not getting in the car with you. No. And it was sounded so rehearsed. And the dispatcher is trying to get information. She's trying to get her address. And right. Pam won't give it to her. She doesn't want him to show up too soon. And this guy's still, you know, and she, help, 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 help. And he's pounding. And then all of a sudden you hear 5 gunshots.
Oh, wow.
And she shot him and killed him. And the gunshot set off the smoke alarm. Now a siren, this alarm is, you know, just beeping in the background. And you can hear the dispatcher tell whoever was on their way, I think there's an alarm going off now too. So I interviewed Chief Neske, who was the first to arrive.
Right.
And that's one of my favorite interviews in the book. He said when he pulled up, she was out in the driveway with her dog saying, I shot him, I shot him, I shot him. So long story short, what she told the police was that she was backing out of her driveway and this silver Nissan, this silver car, came whipping up, and that this guy jumped out of the passenger side. She described the driver to sound like it was Russ Faria. She practically described him to a T without saying his name. And that this guy jumped into the passenger side of her car, held a knife to her neck, and said, wow, take me to the bank to get Russ's money. Meaning the $150,000 that Pam got that Russ should have, that she knocked the knife out of his hand, ran into the house, he followed her in, and she shot him. That's what she told the police.
Oh, my God. This.
So to finish this up.
Yeah, for sure.
What they found in his pockets, in Lewis's pockets, was a note that was a kidnap. It was a list of what Lewis was supposed. Now, again, Pam did all this, so keep this in mind.
Right.
It's a note that says, go to Pam Hupp's house, kidnap her, take her to the bank, get the money, bring her back, kill her, put the knife in her neck. That was on the laundry list. And then it said that to go to Russ's house, and it even gave the address of Russ's mother's house where he was staying, had his name on it twice to make it look like Russ had sent this guy to kill her. And in the other pocket was 9 $100 bills in perfect sequential order, which meant they hadn't been distributed yet. They weren't out in the public.
Right.
And Pam's nightstand, they found a $100 bill with the same sequential sequence, which was one in a billion that she'd have a bill that matched this stranger's money in his pocket. They also found she went to the dollar store, bought the knife that she said he used on her, bought the notepad and the pencil that made the note that was in his pocket. And she ended up getting arrested, and she took the Alford plea when she realized all the evidence they had against her, which meant I'm pleading guilty that I realize you've got enough to convict me, but I'm not pleading guilty that I did it, which let her skip the death penalty.
Yeah.
So she's in prison now for Lewis's.
So for now, until the other trials happen, so that might change that, but unfortunately we're out of time, for the people out there that want to hear or at least read about more of what's happening, a little bit more details, please get the book Countdown to Murder, Pam Hupp, Death Insured, Rebecca F. Pittman. You can get that on Amazon. You can go to her website, RebeccaFPittmanBooks.com. But Rebecca, you're going to have to come back, not only talk a little bit more about this, but you have so many other books that fit right into Truth Be Told. The history and haunting of Lizzie Borden. And I mean, there's just tons of other things that it would be interesting to go through and just find out these fun little true crimes and ghost stories and haunted places. And that's something that Truth Be Told loves to talk about. So, but you've been such a joy. You're a great storyteller, and thank you for doing what you do, putting these, on paper so people like us can read them and be entertained and also hear a little bit about history.
Well, Tony, thank you. I appreciate those words. And I thank you so much for having me on. And if you guys enjoy the book, give me an Amazon review. They help.
Yes, please do. I mean, you know, that Amazon review is like giving a thumbs up. So make sure you go and do that on Amazon. It helps the author quite a bit. So,
Tony, thank you so much. I'd love to come back anytime.
Oh, great. No, I would love that. So thank you so much. And please, everybody, you can join me every Friday right here on our YouTube channel. And please watch Robert Hensley every Monday for the Minuteman Report. He's live on Mondays at 3. And then we have Bonnie Burkett on Wednesdays at 3, Truth Be Told Transformation. If you need those gurus and the spirituality and meditation, that's perfect for you, and we love it right here on Truth Be Told. But until next time, I'm Tony Sweet, and thank you guys for always supporting us. Give us a thumbs up, subscribe to our channel, and actually share this show with other people. That helps us grow, and appreciate you guys for supporting us all these years. Until next time, I'm Tony Sweet. Bye-bye. This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media, Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio, Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.